Matt, you can come over to my side anytime. Just don't bring your haircut.
That sounded so creepy.
Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins. Welcome to episode 41 of C4 from CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris Golden at Light Force, joined again in studio. The tripartite gets put together. We got Nick.
What?
I'm just using a word that I think I might have made up. But we have Matt Lee, the what in the room. He is MattLee980 on Twitter. And next to me is Clay Emo, who's at Canuck Clay. Welcome back, boys.
This is weird, to be honest.
He called you a tripartite.
He called you a tripartridge.
You know, I
the trifecta is, I think, what you were going for.
I'm thrown off right now. If the thousands of C4 viewers were in this room and could see what I could see, they too would have had their world shifted slightly.
I think
to the left.
I think I know what you're getting at. Are you referring to what is on Matt Lee's head?
Yeah, what is on Matt Lee's head?
Matt, tell us what's on your head.
It's a flashy new haircut, and if you two old guys would understand the hairstyles of today, you would see that it's good.
Paint the quick visual for our listeners.
Well, essentially, it's not like the Will Smith 1980s fadeaway, but it's like really short on the sides. It's a one, as they call it in the hairstylist world, on the sides, and it's a little longer on the top, which is pushed off to the side.
He said it's a one. I'd give him a 1 out of 10, I think.
Maybe. Well, see, I know what you're talking about. See, I get a one as well, but see, they blend it into what's on top.
Yeah, they sort of blend it in up top. It's just that the top is quite long in consideration to what you get as well. You got like a one and then like a two up top.
You know, in my day, that's called a mohawk.
It's not exactly a mohawk because it's not like up.
Looking good, Matt. Looking
yeah,
good.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys. You look as out of shape as ever.
Yeah, thank you. I do. I've been working on my out of shape.
You guys are both welcome. Clay, I know you've been hitting the gym unsuccessfully.
Up and down. I'm living vicariously through my son, who's doing well in high school
sports. Let me ask you a question. I know that last year you really got in shape because you were approaching the road to 40.
Yes.
So now that you are 40, have you just sort of let yourself go again?
Does it look like it?
I don't know. I mean, you know your weight better than I do.
No, I can tell you I am still going to the gym a few times a week. And my diet is not bad. It could be better, but I've certainly, although I'm looking at my bottle of Pepsi here, I have cut down on my pop intake, my sugar, my junk food. So overall, I'm doing better. Could be better, as always, but I'm definitely a lot better than I was a year ago at this time. How's that?
Yeah, it's all right. Clay's New Year's resolution, apparently, to continue cutting back. But you know what Clay's other New Year's resolution might be? Is to win a Paul Carson Broadcast and Media Award.
Say what?
Yeah, that's right. I was getting some emails from my corporate email, and I happened to get an email from someone called Friends of Paul Carson for the 3rd Annual Broadcast and Media Awards, and I noticed in the category of Best Blogger, among a list of 10 other names who shall not be mentioned on this podcast, that Clayton Emo from CanucksHockeyBlog.com had been nominated.
I was very surprised. Thank you for passing that on, and yeah, I'm very humbled, obviously. I'm not sure. I think someone in that nomination committee, I know one person who may like one song or one podcast I did with you guys. Maybe that was enough to get me on.
I really don't think it was the podcast, because if it was the podcast, they would have nominated Chris and myself and not Clayton.
It's true. It's very true.
Just walked into that. But the funny thing is, you guys, I think maybe they'll make the nominations public listing or who knows, whatever. But on the list, you might have seen, I think they think remember we were joking about Clay Onemoo?
Yeah.
I think they think my last name starts with an L because the way they have it on the alphabetical listing, I'm after a guy whose last name starts with a J. So they think my last name is Elmu.
I'm going to look that up right now. Elmu. What a loser.
Tickle me Elmu.
Oh.
It's better than Clayton Onemu at the airport.
Yes. But thank you. We'll see what happens. I believe the awards is on Friday, February the 6th, and it's part of a fundraiser. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris, by the way, since we're all back together, mm-hmm. have you taken any heat on Twitter regarding your last comments on the podcast?
No, I haven't seen any heat.
So everybody just agreed with you.
They did. In fact, I've been getting direct messages. I've been getting mentions. Everyone's on board with me on the ship that's sinking that the Canucks will never win another game this season. And then they have won two.
You know, I find it funny how you said that the Canucks would go 0-4 on the road trip, and then they won the next two games after you said that.
Well, maybe that's what the problem's been all along. I've been such a diehard fan that I've believed in blue for as long as I have, supported this team through thick and thin, and all they ever needed was to hear, oh my God, guys, I listened to C4 Podcast. And this is how it went down in the dressing room. You had Juice, he was talking to Hammer. He's like, hey, did you listen to that C4 Podcast? Yeah, that Chris Golden, he's down. I've never heard Chris Golden so upset. Guys, hey, we got to pull this together. We got to win one for Golden. And that's what they did. They won two for Golden. I'm going to single-handedly take credit for the two shutouts, the two wins. Goals galore. Like, it's not like 1-0.
Seven different goal scorers.
Yeah. This is unreal. It's all me.
They did it all for Chris Golden and apparently Clayton Elmu.
Clayton Elmu. I like that name. Tickle me Elmu. Well, we also should probably get into that a little better detail because there is some recent success against Philadelphia and Carolina. So, you know, was my doom and gloom prophecy premature? And ultimately, do you think that the team has now turned a corner with Ham Hughes back in tow?
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Also coming up, we're going to get into the fact that the Vancouver Canucks apparently are to begin serious contract discussions with Chris Tanev. Holy, there's a guy who's been waiting patiently for a long-term contract. We're going to talk about what he's worth.
And I think we're going to talk about something or someone that we talked about the last time I was on this podcast.
Pretty much every episode.
Three episodes ago. Let's talk a bit more about Zach Cassian.
Mr. Baggage, Zach Cassian.
Oh, is it time for Rewind?
Yeah, it is time for Rewind. I've been pointing at you for the last 3 seconds to go ahead, Chris.
That's pretty cool.
See Clay over there on the sides trying hard not to laugh on the mic. See, this is what happens when all three of us are actually in studio together. It's like we're shaking off the rust together.
I miss you guys.
It's like we got back on a bicycle that didn't have a seat on it.
That would be painful.
Exactly.
That's a horrible visual.
Jeez. Well, I'm in fairness, I was waiting for one of those epic drops you create for us. And that's what threw me off. So, but yeah, it's time for Rewind, where we go and talk about the week that was with the Vancouver Canucks. And for this podcast, being it's only a few days since the last one, why don't we start off talking about that win against the Philadelphia Flyers, where the Vancouver Canucks scored 4 goals to shut them out. Blew me away.
Yeah, it was a little surprising, especially given your latest remarks on the podcast. I don't think anyone expected for the Vancouver Canucks to have a second period like they did. Was it 3 goals or was it all 4 goals in the second?
No, for Philly, it was actually, they're evenly distributed. 2 in the first, 2 in the second.
Okay, that's what it was. Either way, I don't think anyone expected really the Vancouver Canucks to come out of the gates like they did because offense obviously is such a hard thing to come by. They hadn't scored in 6 periods up until that game, or they had 1 goal in 6 periods up until that game. So for them to score 4 goals in the game completely was a little surprising, but I think it's also important to remember, if you're a half-empty person like myself, that they were playing Ray Emery and a backup goaltender who's been journeyman across Europe as well. Steve Mason.
Yeah, you know, my friend was in Philly earlier this season, and he went to go see a game live. Obviously, it wasn't the Canucks. It was someone visiting Philly. I can't remember who. And this guy's quite a knowledgeable hockey person. It's at Dave Leeson on Twitter, one of my friends. And he said that Philly's defense was horrible. Like, seeing them live, he could see they had no structure coming out of their zone, no structure, just on coverage. And I'm not saying it was, you know, it was a nice combination of Canucks offense, Canucks strong defense, and bad Philly defense, but I think we saw it a little bit. You know, 2 even strength goals, 2 power play goals. It was a complete effort by our team and a nice way to start the road trip, for sure.
Well, start the road trip.
Well, the one thing that did occur to me to be different was the fact that you did see that early first period fight between Kevin Bieksa and Wayne Simmonds. And I find that when Bieksa actually gets physical, especially physical at the start of a game, the team seems to play a little bit differently. It gets them fired up, gets them engaged. The first period, though, was really where all the Canucks had to worry about, and they come out ahead 2-0. And after that, you know, the tempo of the game shifted quite a bit. I mean, the Flyers shot more pucks at the net than the Canucks did, but that could very well be them chasing. What's interesting, though, is that not only are they getting these four goals, different scores, but two of them came on the power play. And that was something that was really dogging the Canucks, albeit maybe with fewer power play opportunities in the more recent history.
Yeah, I was a little surprised at that, too, finding the back of the net twice on the power play. I'm not sure if Willie Desjardins is mixing things up on his power play units lately, but you noticed that Nick Bonino started that game on the third line, so maybe that got him going a little bit, and that trickled down into the special teams as well. I think a guy like Nick Bonino, who's obviously squeezed the stick pretty tight over the last couple months, really started to find his groove, and I think he was moving the puck very well on the power play. Same thing goes for Radim Vrbata. We already saw the Sedins put some magic together against the Flyers as well, especially that deflection goal from Daniel Sedin. So I think if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you take it as a positive. Is it a harbinger of things to come? That's still up in the air for me.
You know, I just realized, yes, they've already played one game in Nashville on the road trip, so I see why you gave me that look, Matt Lee.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Thank you, Clay.
But one thing, you know, I've talked about this on Twitter a little bit. I think Bonino was struggling, Higgins was struggling, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why Desjardins was so set on keeping these guys together. I know Daniel's a left winger, and Higgins is a left winger, and the two natural left wingers on the team. And I remember Burrows, someone pointed out to me that Burrows has played on the left wing as well, so I get all that. But I just couldn't figure out why he kept them together for so long. And look at that, the first game he splits them up, you know. I'd say Bonino was at least more obvious than Higgins was showing up on the score sheet, but what a beautiful spinorama. Chris, did you like that?
You know, the spinorama is an art, and I don't think he could do it any better than he did.
It was quite accidental in my mind, though. it looked like he sort of lost the puck in his feet a little bit, and he was just trying to turn to refine the puck, and then afterwards it just somehow managed to still be on his stick. I was kind of surprised that he didn't get the puck taken off of him in that play in the first place, but yeah, it was a pretty nice goal nonetheless. If you put it all in like one sequence together, it looked really nice. Yeah.
The other interesting note about this game, Zach Cassian got scratched.
Bump, bump, bump.
And I know we're going to talk about this down the road. Zach finds his way back up to the Pine, and allegedly he had been scratched earlier on his return from his injury. Chris Higgins, though. Chris Higgins still on the ice. What will Chris ever do to find his way either down the depth chart or upstairs for a spell?
Yeah, that's a good question. What does Chris Higgins have to do to play himself off of the second line? He's just... At some point, you have to punish a guy for not producing. I mean, he's got, what was it, 2 points since November or something like that?
Oh, God, if that. I don't know.
I think that's what it is.
Does he get a lot of penalty kill time? Like, is he good there?
He is a decent penalty killer, is Chris Higgins, yeah. But I don't think, you know, that's going to justify the guy being on the second line, because he's supposed to be on the second line because he's supposed to produce at even strength, and he just hasn't done that.
Yeah.
You know who I think? We'll get into it later on Half Full, Half Empty.
Okay. Well, moving straight out of Philadelphia, the Canucks went into Carolina and then win 3-0 there. Back-to-back shutouts going to Mr. Ryan Miller. Again, in a game that the Vancouver Canucks produced three different scoring or scorers, all goals in the second period. Although this game, there really was not much doubt at all. But again, the Vancouver Canucks significantly outshot by the Carolina Hurricanes. What did you guys take from this game?
I took that Cam Ward had a bad game.
Carolina is bad.
Hey, they're in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes.
They are a bad team.
Yeah, it was nice to see the Canucks get three indeed, Chris, and without Daniel, Henrik, or Vrbata getting points. So that was nice to see, with Dorsett getting a goal, of course, and who else
Mathias
scored?
And Burrows.
Yeah, Mathias and Burrows. So three forwards, three of not the primary scorers. I think it bodes well for the team.
Now, again, talking about scratches, Zach Cassian's still upstairs, but this one rocked my world. Lucas Bisa was scratched in favor of Frankie Corrado.
You know why?
Why?
Because Willie Desjardins is listening to Johnny from Tokyo.
Really? You think that's what it is?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Johnny from Tokyo made a long-distance phone call to Willie Desjardins in Carolina and told him that.
All okay. I care about is I hope that Johnny from Tokyo has a better haircut than you, Matt.
Hmm.
Ouch.
Yeah, I can. It just got suddenly colder here.
It did.
But also, Ham Hughes returned, and Yannick Weber found his way upstairs as well to free up that space. The pairing, though, was Ham Hughes and Corrado, and dare I say it, they didn't look half bad.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think, and this has been well voiced on the podcast as well, that we assumed that when Dan Ham Hughes returned to action that Kevin Bieksa would be the guy who sort of benefited from it. He had a pair of assists, but largely because he wasn't playing with Dan Ham Hughes. So I'm curious, is there a trickle-down effect here with Bieksa and Ham Hughes? But first of all, going back to your point about Frankie Corrado, do you think that this allows Corrado to stay up a little longer with the Vancouver Canucks?
I don't think he's done anything deserve not to. I mean, he's played well. He hasn't been a liability. Even in the game he had gotten into about a week or so ago, he was one of the better defensemen. And yet found him, you know, through math, through the roll of the dice, or however the heck they decide which defensemen are going to start at any given night, found his way to the press box. I think you run with it. Why change it? It's no different than the Tanev-Edler pairing. You don't change it if it's working.
So if you have a pairing of Ham Hughes and Corrado, you have a pairing of Edler and Tanev, and that leaves Bieksa with
Stanton.
Are those three defensive pairings that, at least on paper, you feel confident about?
I'm okay with it right now until Ham Hughes goes and potentially tears his groin again.
Okay. Oh, somebody knock you on wood.
Yeah, you're very half full today.
Yeah, you are so half empty. You're full empty.
Did
lately.
You guys not see that image, though, of I don't know what the heck Miller was doing? But he pretty much was playing like the extra defenseman. The net's wide open, and there's Ham Hughes throwing his legs out like he's flying into the net to stop the puck. Someone actually tweeted, and it was in the Provies from the Vancouver Province, about how not to do defense. Like if that's how the Canucks are going to play. Hammer didn't get surgery. He's probably still hurt.
Mm.
He just did it instinctively, I'm assuming, to Dan Ham Hughes.
Yeah, and he's the type of player that I think would go put
body on the line.
Exactly.
You know why I'm excited about the D, though? Think of our team 2 weeks ago before Corrado was called up for this time. Basically, by getting Dan Ham Hughes back, by getting Frankie Corrado playing well, that's in essence adding two good D-men to your team. And look who's sitting. Right now, it is Spezza and it is Weber. And right here at the start of the season, we sat here and said, not even considering Frankie Corrado, we said, of those seven guys, who's going to be one that's sitting? And I know we debated in here between Stanton, Weber, and Spezza. But two of those three, Weber and Spezza, are the ones that are sitting right now. So I think if Corrado continues to play well, to Chris's point, Ham Hughes is finding his way back in the lineup. That is basically adding two D-men we didn't have 2 weeks ago, and it makes the team that much stronger. And I think it's fine that Weber and Spezza are the ones sitting right now. Because Weber, he was the one I was surprised that got in so much anyways.
Well, under no circumstances, I think, should Lucas Spezza be playing for the Vancouver Canucks just given his recent play lately. I mean, you see the struggles in the defensive end, and I think he adds some grit to your lineup, kind of like a poor man's version of Kevin Bieksa, but he's prone to so many mistakes, and we saw those glaring mistakes over the last couple months that Dan Ham Hughes was out. If you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, you have to be at least a little unsatisfied or jaded with his play, and I can't imagine a situation where the Vancouver Canucks are either bringing him back for the same amount of money or committing any term of long-term amounts to Spezza as well down the road.
Now, the other point as well, the blue line, is Kevin Bieksa gets two assists. How much is that to do with the fact that Ham Hughes is back and maybe he feels less strained to do whatever the heck he does on the blue line? Well, he also led the game in giveaways with 5.
Oh. Well, I think the addition of Dan Ham Hughes takes the focus for Kevin Bieksa off of shutting down an opponent's best players. I think you probably saw it, and I haven't seen the statistics to back it up, but you probably saw Dan Ham Hughes matched up against the Eric Staals and then Jeff Skinners against Carolina. So I think that opened up the possibility for Kevin Bieksa to play a little bit more freely, a little bit more run and gun, and that's why you saw him carry the puck a little bit, and that's obviously why you saw him get a pair of assists in the win.
Hmm. Well, who stood out in these two games?
Ryan Miller.
Anyone else?
Yeah, Ryan Miller is obviously the easy decision. You know who really stood out for me was Sean Mathias. And I was going to say earlier that if Chris Higgins has struggled, I wouldn't have a problem with Sean Mathias being up on the left wing center second line role, because I think he's shown flashes of being a pretty good player in offensive situations. I mean, how many goals has Sean Mathias scored on a breakaway this year? It seems like that's either a set play for this team or he's just finding himself in the right place, right time.
I think it's right place, right time. He's a big boy and he's got speed. And he's playing with this confidence that has just, you know, it has appeared where he is being that power forward type.
Yeah, I mean, I'm encouraged by Sean Mathias's play, but how much do you think his game could possibly suffer if you do bump him up to the second line? So there's that to consider as well. Are you afraid of ruining the chemistry that he's had with the guys like Derek Dorsett and Yannick Hansen?
Well, the way the Canucks play with three third lines, just make that line the second line.
Yeah, this point.
In case some of you wonder who the best is.
This guy's an incompetent fool.
The best of the best of the best, sir.
This guy is an absolute media junkie.
The best of the best of the best, sir. Yeah, with honors.
Don't push me here.
But we just sucked.
Oh no! We suck again!
I rediscovered just how awesomely awesome my life is.
This isn't rock bottom, I don't know what is.
It's okay, Kevin BX, that's not rock bottom anymore because he got two wins now. This is half full, half empty, and first of all, let's start with this. After that Nashville game, Chris, mm-hmm. Vancouver Canucks said in that locker room, there's no panic in this room. Now, do you think that they were actually being serious, or do you think there was a legit amount of panic in that room? I think the team was quick to dispel any sort of suggestion that the team was headed for the same crash that they did last year.
Well, I think the team is far too educated in how to converse with the media to ever admit whether or not they're panicking.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't expect them after that 5-1 loss to be running around with their heads on fire or anything, but as disturbing as an image that would be. But you'd think that they'd acknowledge that, you know, they're obviously not playing well enough to win games.
Which I think they did. They admitted as much, you know, but it was in cliche fashion. Oh, we didn't do enough to win that game. You know, we need to play a full 60 minutes. We got to work hard. We got to be 110%. Play on both ends of the ice.
All right. That's enough.
We're gripping our sticks too hard.
Okay.
Easy there. But it's true. Henrik, especially when you hear Henrik, and as the captain, he gets the bulk of the media. He never seems panicked. He's good about not deflecting blame to others either. He'll just say, Daniel and I need to play better, or we need to be more effective, or get more shots, whatever it may be. And I think the team takes the personality of its captain, its leader. So if he's not panicked, I don't think the team's going to show panic. And you look at Desjardins, he's not a hothead like Tortorella and Benning and Linden, even going up the chain. They seem very calm. So I don't think there was panic in that room. I believe it when they say that, despite what we've been talking about on our podcast for the last couple of times.
All right, that said, the Vancouver Canucks taking on Florida Panthers on Monday in Roberto Luongo's new home turf, and that'll be the fourth game of their five-game road swing. How are you guys feeling very quickly on Vancouver taking on Luongo? Is it possible that they can pick up a third win on this five-game road trip?
Nope. And I'm actually being serious. I think every time the Vancouver Canucks are going to face Luongo, Luongo's bringing his A-game.
I think it's safe to say the Canucks will lose on Tuesday against Tampa Bay to close out the trip.
And I think we're going to lose in Florida.
So they go 2-3. Actually, you know what? If you think about it, 2-3 wouldn't be the worst thing for the Vancouver Canucks on this road trip.
No, and that's what you had said a week ago, was that you had sort of looked at, okay, yeah, they're going to get a win here, they're going to get a win there, they're going to get those losses there. I think you had them as 2 wins, 3 losses on the road trip. I had them as 0-4. And then Clay, you're back.
So Clay had them going 5-0.
Probably.
Well, at least 4-1.
Wow.
They'll beat Florida. Luongo slowed down a little bit. Don't know why I couldn't get the word slow out. That was a little slow. But he slowed down a little bit. I think tit for tat, it's our turn to win in their building.
All right, fair enough. Let's talk Zach Kastin. And I know he's been a focal point of this podcast for the last couple weeks now. Trade discussion, it continues. Clay, first of all, you've already heard Chris and I's perspective on his these trade rumors surrounding Zach Kassian. So I'm just curious to get your thoughts on whether the Canucks should keep him, promote him, trade him, do something with him, bury him. What do you think?
I think that the Canucks should play him and keep him. But given what's happened in the last week, I don't think they will. There's, you know, at a time where you want the team to break out of a funk and you need some energy and some aggression or whatever it is, you think he'd be, he hasn't really played a lot this year, comparatively speaking. So you think this would be a prime time for him to play, especially with Bonino and Higgins and others struggling prior to that game. And for him to be benched twice, you know, in two nights. Yeah, it's saying something. And you hear what Benning's been saying on the... He's kind of doesn't say much on the radio, but by not saying much, I think he's saying a lot.
Yeah, and you get the sense that there's a little bit of foreshadowing in Benning's words. You know, he's saying, you know, we're always looking at ways to improve this team. He talks about Zach Kassian sometimes saying that, you know, like, unlike Mike Gillis, he's not going to say we're happy with Zach's development thus far. He has never come out and say that. Chris, I asked to you, if you're Jim Benning and if you're Willie Desjardins, how much patience do you have with a guy like Zach Kassian, who you know is talented enough to play this game, but he hasn't put it all together somehow?
Well, I think regardless of how much patience they had, it's quite indicative that Willie Desjardins is talking about a player who did not even play in the game as not showing what it takes to play. His comments were quite revealing about Zach Kassian, and I don't know if it was done with purpose to be seen as a wake-up call, but when he's saying that Zach hasn't done enough to earn a spot on the ice, I think that's quite indicative of there being no longer any patience, no rope for him to play with. And it's really weird because we go back to sort of Chris Higgins, who can do no wrong, and Zach Kassian, who can do no right.
Yeah.
I think Kassian should just beat Higgins up.
Maybe. But all things considered.
Oh, that'll endear himself to fans even more.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes teams gel after a good scrap.
Yeah. I don't see that happening in
this particular situation. We should have one right now.
That's right. I win.
Let's get a Royal Rumble going right here. Triple threat match.
I admit I lose.
No.
I would use Clay as a shield and throw him at you, Chris, and then get out of the room. Just to add some more gasoline to this fire, Nick Kiprios suggesting on Saturday night that Kassian is being shopped, but other teams are worried about how he'd affect team chemistry. Obviously, that begs the question, is there more to the Zach Kassian story here than meets the eye? And I know that there's been a discussion of off-ice issues over the years that Zach Kassian's been here.
Well, CHP sources have Zach Kassian is getting more FaceTime at the Roxy than Shane O'Brien ever did. So,
wow.
You know, he's a young kid, and I have no issue. And, you know, I was once young that, you know, life just is there for you. You're invincible. You just have some fun. And this is a kid who's got a lot of
Matt's
time
in that phase
and money.
Right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at his haircut.
Yeah, it's devil may care you are, Matt. The problem, though, is that if that's, you know, where his focus is, that's a distraction. And that takes away from his ability to focus on the game that he earns his keep and earns his living with.
And just to, you know, build off of your comment, I looked up a quote here from Brad Richardson to the Globe and Mail earlier this month. He made reference to Zach Kassian back in mid-November. He said, "Zach's hilarious and you want to be around him, but you need to be ready for games too. I'm not saying that was an issue, but as you get older and you learn better and how to prepare, for a guy like him, he needs to learn to pull it in." So, obviously, there's, between the lines, references to Zach Kassian possibly partying out in Vancouver. Again, we get it. He's a kid. He's still like 23, 24 years old. So, you know, water is wet and kids and hockey players are going to party. But at some point, I guess if you're line mates or teammates of Zach Kassian, you're sort of frustrated that he hasn't shown that actual dedication or willingness to actually improve on the ice.
No, you're right on there, Matt. And it's funny. You look at this quote from Richardson, and he does the classic. He starts it off with something nice, right? The criticism sandwich, yeah. As they say. Right? He's hilarious, and you want to be around him. Yeah, fun guy, blah, blah, blah.
And then there's the big but.
Yeah, but and what he really wanted to say is he's got to know his role and pick his spots. And you look at Richardson, this is a guy who is probably pegged to play with Kassian and Mathias, yeah, or any combination of those kind of guys on the third line. And if Cassie's not going, it's going to affect Richardson a little bit too. Now, Richardson got to play with Burrows and Higgins on the, quote, second line in the last couple games. But it's I think it's very telling that he'll say something like this. Richardson, who you don't hear a lot in the media, he's a quiet leader, you know, and he's a good leader, but he doesn't get quoted a lot. So the more I think that you need to put some stock into this.
Yeah. And, you know, just to bring this to an example of my own, just on a small scale, obviously, like beer league hockey, if you play hockey and you want to win, obviously, and when you have line mates who are either lazy or they show that they don't care as much and you're putting in all your effort, why would you want to play with alongside a guy like that? So you understand, for the Vancouver Canucks and as a professional hockey organization, this is a team that wants to win. They want success on the ice. And if you're a guy like Brad Richardson, a guy who's cut your teeth in the NHL, you've played 10 plus years now, you're obviously very frustrated when this 3 or 4 year player has shown no willingness to get better when he has all the tools in the toolkit to get better.
But in the quote, he says, I'm not saying that this was an issue, which to me is...
Which means it was an issue.
It was an issue. Yeah, it's especially, again, I'm harping on the media training. The fact that he comes out and essentially says, I'm going to translate here. He's hilarious and you want to be around him. It's a fun guy who just ultimately is the life of every party, and to be the life of the party, you got to go and party. You need to be ready for games too, so that's translation. He hasn't been ready for maybe games as he should have been. Not saying this is an issue, it probably was, but as you get older, you learn how to better prepare. So he's saying, yeah, young kid, still doesn't actually know how to be a pro, and for a guy like him, he needs to learn to pull it in. Dude's burning a candle at every end possible.
I'm not going to bring up any sort of trade that took place in the 1980s regarding the Vancouver Canucks and the Boston Bruins.
Don't you dare.
Let me move to the other side of the desk first.
But, you know, on a different scale, but on the same timeline, there was a case where Tyler Seguin was also told that, you know, his off-ice issues were too much for the Boston Bruins to bear. And, of course, I'm not comparing Tyler Seguin to Zach Kassian, but you saw what happened when Tyler Seguin had a change of scenery and he went to Dallas and all these sort of issues hit home from him. He put it all together eventually, and now look at him. He's one of the biggest superstars in the NHL. So if you're Jim Benning and Willie DeJardins, is an example like that give you, you know, any sort of leeriness to making a trade which would send Zach Kassian out of town?
But that trade when Seguin was sent to Dallas?
Yep.
To me, the trade is what was the wake-up call for a kid who needed one.
So would a trade for Zach Kassian out of town wake him up, and obviously you would see him put it all together?
Maybe.
So how would this work in the Vancouver Canucks' favor then if they trade a guy whose stock is probably at an all-time low and he gets a wake-up call on his new team and he starts putting it all together?
So right now he is an asset that, as you said, maybe not worth all that much, but sometimes you got to cut off the dead weight. And, you know, what is the team chemistry like right now? You'd raise the point where if you're playing hard and you're being held to a standard of accountability and you see others around you who don't either seem to be as committed to that standard of accountability or not being held to the same account, at some point in time, you become jaded yourself and you decide, you know what? That's a problem. I'm going to maybe do less. I'm going to be doing more, but I'm going to let that bother me. I don't work in professional sports. The industry that I work in, though, when it comes to coaching and developing people, you have to hold people to account. There are standards that must be upheld. And if you don't, it's a cancer. It spreads. And it gets worse and worse to the point that you find yourself in such a deep hole, you don't get out of it.
Let's keep talking about some trade talk before we get into the Chris Tanev discussion. Clay, Chris and I had a big discussion about Eddie Lack last podcast. I'm just curious as to your thoughts. Do you think Eddie Lack is going to get shipped out by the trade deadline, or are the Canucks better served keeping him in their lineup as sort of an insurance policy?
I'm going to answer both your questions with yes. I think the Canucks are stronger with him, but I do see a scenario where he is moved. And I say that because Lack is never going to be a starter here in the next 3 years. It seems like they are very committed to Ryan Miller, and they are very committed to a schedule and giving Miller his starts, letting him play, getting his rhythm, get time off when he's not feeling well, blah, blah, blah. And it looks like Willie Desjardins does not want to get involved in any side of, you know, type of goalie controversy. Eddie Lack's not getting younger. Yeah, he's relatively young, but not completely young, not a baby anymore. So so here's the catch 22, obviously, and I think you guys have talked about this, is if you want to move him, you got to get him into some games and get his trade value up.
And I think they've done that over the last couple of games. Like Eddie Lack's showings over the last couple of weeks have certainly been at least solid enough.
Yeah.
But is it enough to get fair value back in exchange for him?
Yeah, and it'd be different if Markstrom wasn't lighting it up, right, in Utica, or if they're looking a few years down the road at Demko and stuff. So it's not like thankfully, the goaltending cupboard is nice and it's not bare. So I would not be surprised to see a move. I know it would make a lot of fans here upset that love him and love his personality. But if they are truly sticking to the mantra of improving the team, I think you do have to consider it.
Yeah, and if you're Jim Benning, certainly in the short term, it's a tempting decision to sort of package Cassian and Lack together, two young players who still have some sort of upside as well. All right, guys, let's talk a little bit of Chris Tanev now. Elliot Friedman saying on Saturday night that he's expecting the Vancouver Canucks to start serious contract negotiations with Chris Tanev on a long-term contract this weekend. First of all, what are your guys' immediate reactions to the possibility of committing to a long-term contract with Chris Tanev? Chris, let's start with you because you're the biggest proponent of one young Chris Tanev.
I like Chris Tanev. I think he deserves, if we're going to go for a long contract, I think you give him term and you nail him on the $4 million mark that was set before with BX and Hamius. I don't entirely believe he's up to the Edler dollars yet.
I'm already sort of leery at $4 million a year on a long-term contract.
No, but you have to consider, are we going to have Hamius and Bieksa for much longer at that price? I don't think so. And if you were to look at how the Vancouver Canucks have structured their payroll on the blue line, the top sort of pairing tends to get that sort of $4 million number. Now, Edler is obviously against the grain and that he gets more, but Tanev doesn't have a whole lot of leverage. He's still an RFA.
Yeah, and that's exactly the reason why I don't think he deserves $4 million a year. If you look at his last two contracts, they've both been one-year deals. One was a $1.5 million option, then it was a $2 million option this offseason. So I'm a little leery about giving him up to $4 million. I'd be comfortable with $3.5 million over a four-year deal.
So if you're going to give him $3.5 million, but you won't give him $4 million.
I'm penny-pinching.
Uh-huh.
You make a good point, Chris, about BX and Hamhuis. Their contracts run out at the end of next season.
Mm-hmm. And then we got that really came up.
Yeah, it did. I was actually surprised when I looked it up. And then, as Chris referenced, Edler has got three more years at $5 million. So maybe you try and sign Tanev, not just because they're playing together right now, but maybe you sign him for, 3 or 4 years. And after that, if he's still playing well and still developing and become a bona fide top two, which he may, you never know, or at least like a strong number three, then maybe that's when you go for the 4 or 4.5. But I kind of, with you, Matt, I could see, I don't know if he would take this, but I could see a $3 or $3.5 million for 3 years kind of thing.
I think if you're Chris Tanev, you're just happy that you're getting 3 years as opposed to just 1 year deal like he has the last couple of years.
Yeah, but those 1 year deals are based on the fact that the team and him have not come to a deal of any length.
Well, I mean, that said, between last offseason and now, we really saw Chris Tanev step it up, especially in the absence of Dan Hamhuis. And I believe it was Kevin Bieksa himself over the offseason who said that he believes Chris Tanev is one of the most underrated defensemen in the NHL. So having seen what Chris Tanev has done with Dan Hamhuis out of the lineup, I don't think the Canucks have any choice but to commit a long-term contract to Chris Tanev because of the fact that guys like Chris Tanev don't exactly grow on trees in the NHL anymore. Most teams tend to lock up their assets before they even hit free agency.
So to that point, though, it has to be. Like, there's no, if you do 1 year deal and he hits UFA, someone's throwing stupid money at him. So you have to have him locked into term.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're Chris Tanev, I think you're wanting to get paid. And I think it's a fair request.
For 16 over four years?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, 4x4 is a nice round number for everybody in the Chris Tanev party. It's just, I think if you're Jim Benning, you're sort of saying to yourself, well, I've only been here for 1 year. I like what I've seen from you. This is what I believe is fair, 14 over four.
Yeah, you know, if you give him 4 years, he'd be the only guy under contract on that fourth year. I'm looking at every contract winds up. you know, they will eventually, obviously, but they all wind up for the Canucks in the year 2017-18, which would be the third year of this new deal for Tanev. So
let me ask you this hypothetical deal then. Would you rather have Chris Tanev at $14 million over 4 years, $3.5 million cap hit, or would you rather have him at $12 million over 3 years, a $4 million cap hit?
I'd like a longer term.
You'd rather go for the longer term?
I actually agree when you put it that way.
Because the cap number would be higher on a shorter term contract, which expires at the same time as Alex Edler's contract, but you're saving about $500,000 a year in cap space if you give him one extra year.
So 3 years from now, based on a shorter deal, you have Tanev and Edler, arguably your top pairing probably at that time, both hitting unrestricted free agency. So you are now left without a blue line.
This is why I'm not the general manager of anything.
That's why I want the longer term. You still need the stagger deals.
Would you even venture to a 5-year deal for Chris Tanev?
I don't think we're going to get it.
No.
He wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't. Not if I was him.
I'm just asking hypothetically if you would.
I'd want to get
paid. You would, but you don't think he will?
No. I wouldn't go for a 5. Like, I mean, if I was Jim Benning, I might offer it.
Yeah.
If I was Chris Tanev, I probably wouldn't accept it.
Well, obviously, that eats into years of his unrestricted free agency period. So if you're Chris Tanev, it probably serves you best to avoid anything more than probably 4 years.
Sure.
Interesting. Well, we'll put it out to the Ask CHB Universe on another podcast.
Yeah, next episode.
Ask them what they think. Because obviously, Chris Tanev is no longer an unsung hero, I think, in the Vancouver Canucks ranks. I mean, we've seen that over the last couple of years that he's sort of been an unsung hero. But I think for me, this first half of the season has really been a coming out party of sorts for him, because he's sort of emerged as at least a top pairing defenseman in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise to Chris.
No.
Chris knew the whole time.
I did.
From the first time he set foot on the Canucks ice.
Exactly.
One more thing before we get into we won't get into Ask CHB this week, but before we get into at least the Haiku Corner, Nick Kiprios putting out that the Colorado Avalanche putting out feelers on Ryan O'Reilly looking for help on the blue line. In your guys' opinion, and we knew last year that at least Mike Gillis seemed to be interested in O'Reilly, but are the Canucks interested at all in Ryan O'Reilly?
Well, we got his brother, so why not?
That was the exact reason why they signed Cal O'Reilly in the first place, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
No, but serious, any interest? Not anymore?
I'd kick the tires.
I would. He's only 23 years old. He did well. He's got a good contract for a 23-year-old.
Well, that's what happens when you sign a big offer sheet with the Calgary Flames, as he did, right?
Well, the funniest offer sheet situation ever known to man in the NHL. That would have been awesome.
I really wish the Avs just did not match that deal.
And then just picked him up on waivers.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome. Oh, I would have loved it.
I don't think the Canucks are going to be interested anymore, given that they have Nick Bonino now. That said, hypothetically, it would be great to imagine a center depth of Henrik Sedin, Ryan O'Reilly, Nick Bonino, and Bo Horvat, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds nice when you put it that way. Can the Canucks fit him in their money structure?
Probably.
Oh, yeah, there's room. The Canucks have room in this.
I think if you're the Avalanche, you're asking for Chris Tanev.
Yeah, but you're not. I'm not giving up Chris Tanev.
Well, the Avs need a defenseman.
Well,
Chris Tanev's as steady as it comes.
I'm going to kick the tires and I'm going to offer him a third round pick and hope for the best.
Okay. Yeah. This is Jim Benning's first offer. We will give you Spezza and a third round pick.
That seems fair.
Take the deal. No, it's not.
We'll throw in Chris Golden.
I would throw in Chris Golden for Ryan O'Reilly. Easily. I'd throw in Chris Golden and his first unborn child for Ryan O'Reilly.
Oh, wow.
You haven't even talked to my wife about that.
I think Marnie would get on board with it.
Not for Ryan O'Reilly. She might get rid of me, but she's not getting rid of that firstborn.
Lundqvist, maybe.
Yeah, Lundqvist.
Fort Lundqvist. Anyway.
So it's not going to happen, I'm assuming. Let me ask you this very quickly again before we get into the Haiku Corner. Of the three, who's more likely to get traded? Zach Kassian, Eddie Lack, Chris Tanev, in order.
Clay, you do this first.
I'm going to go with the order you just gave it to us. Kassian, Lack, Tanev.
There's no chance that Chris Tanev gets traded, by the way, right?
Not if I was GM.
Chris?
You have to ask me that question?
Okay, well, let me just hit the button already. I mean, goodness gracious.
Garth, that was a haiku.
Oh, this is weird. Clay Nemo in studio for this one.
I'm getting the jitters. This is exciting. I can't remember the last time I was actually in studio to channel the power of the 575 with you, Matt, and you, Chris. This thing is taking off, boys. I actually gave people more time today. I know last time you guys dutifully and wonderfully sent the request out and people wanted a theme and people were loyal to me. And
yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, like, we didn't understand that at all, by the way.
We try to get a haiku. We try to throw out some love and we got Shoe Thief saying,
Shoe Thief is all over us. Sorry, we're loyal to Clay. I don't know why.
So I throw it out there today, and these people are loyal. Seven came back today. We won't have time for all seven. Shoe Thief is actually not one of them.
Really?
Wow.
Actually, it's,
well, I gave up all of my SCHB time for you.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll do five. There are five good ones that I picked. No particular theme other than that they should be Canucks themed. And Matt and Chris, I'm going to go to at least one of you for instant reaction. Ryan Classic at Ryan Classic says, back-to-back shutouts. Wait, we signed Ryan Miller? When did that happen? Chris, what do you think he means by that?
I'm not too sure.
It means that he never noticed Ryan Miller before this.
Oh, well,
he is a Senators fan.
Okay, that's good to know. Anna Forsyth, friend of the blog, at aforsyth03. Two solid efforts. Nothing to write home over. At least we're scoring now. Matt, that's kind of a half full, half empty one, I think, from
that
Anna.
That felt like it was composed by Chris Golden. Sort of a, oh, two shutouts, no big deal. They were against two bad teams.
We got Brian. He used to be at Kestrels, and now we know he's at Verbatros. You guys know this. Canucks win again. Pack your bags, boys. Time to move. Eastern Conference. I like that one, Chris.
Well, that would be returning to the roots because the Vancouver Canucks were a member of the Eastern Conference when they joined the NHL.
Oh, that's good to know. Wouldn't it be neat if we were in the Metropolitan Division? A lot of bad travel, but we would rack up some good points, I think.
It's a lot of bad travel, whatever division the Canucks are in.
All right, two more. Chris Hardman at AJoyForever83. So wait, we're good again? Until we lose again, who cares? They all count. Matt, what do you think of that? They all count. Where's the music?
Oh, I was just about to press this first. Okay. And I thought you were the optimistic one around here.
I'll bring up the optimism for the second half, I promise.
That's my first reaction to that.
I like that. And lastly, Daniel Wagner at A. Daniel Wagner. Oh, he gets a restart of the music.
Yeah. Well.
From the Pass It to Boulos blog. I love it when other blogs are throwing in haikus to our blog. Isn't that kind of cool?
It is kind of cool.
Until I will not be voting for Daniel Wagner, though, for best Canucks blogger, though.
I think I may. Well, actually, maybe not. Listen to his haiku. Canucks hockey blog. Blog about Canucks hockey. Canucks hockey blog.
Pass it to Boulos.
Okay.
Pass
that,
it to Boulos.
That works.
That's five.
A blog.
Who is Jan Boulos?
Passing to.
That's seven.
Pass it to Boulos.
Pass it to Boulos.
See, we can do that. We can play that game too.
And I just came. I just pulled that out of nowhere.
Okay, one last one. And Chris, this is a tribute to you. Yes, people were loyal to me, but you know what? You know how you know this haiku thing taking off? People like Brian Klein. I'm not going to say his Twitter handle because I think it's a swear word. I try not to say those things. But anyways, you guys can look him up. It just spells 04F. No, PHUXACHE. I'll let you guys figure that out. He actually ended his haiku by saying, O for light force, like zero for light force. So you're getting mentioned now, Chris, in these haikus.
That is the haiku of the year. Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Right there.
Hey, I deserve haiku. In fact, everyone should be tweeting about me. ultimately, it works this way. Light force, the world.
There's five syllables right there. So this is what we're going to do. For the next haiku corner on the next C4 podcast, I'm going to tweet it out. And the theme is going to be work the word light force into your haiku. And you know what? If it's a good one, we might even set up a prize or even a meeting with Light Force for the winner.
That's the worst prize ever.
I will get a picture. I will autograph said picture. In fact, I will mail said picture that has been autographed to
no
them.
One would want that.
Well, you've heard it here first. Thank you for your submissions. And I predict our next C4, our next haiku corner, it's going to be either going to be the biggest and biggest best ever, or we're going to see the demise of a once promising segment.
Chris, you want to wrap this up before you take even more heat than my haircut is?
Sure. So here we are wrapping up a fantastic 41st episode. Clay, you know, how's it been being back in the studio, flexing these podcast muscles of yours?
I love being in the studio. I love seeing the physical reactions on your physical face. I don't like seeing Matt's haircut, but Chris,
I do love seeing Clay roll around in the aisles every time we tell a stupid joke, though.
Yeah, it's funny. This rolling chair gets me away from the mic pretty easily, but I do like being down here. My office is moving away from downtown, so we got to soak up these moments as we can. I got basically 6 more weeks downtown, and then it's going to be more of an effort to get out here.
Where
but
are you guys moving to
Cambie and 33rd. So,
well, that's quite the distance.
15 minutes closer to my house, but 15 minutes further from here. But we'll figure it out. As for the Canucks, what we should be talking about, I'm optimistic. Yeah, they got Florida. Yeah, they got Tampa. They're going to win at least one of those, if not both. And we're going to come back home ready to go.
Yeah, you know what? I can see where a lot of optimism is lying right now. Like, if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan who sees the glass half full, they've got Florida, they've got Tampa, but then they've got a full week off before they entertain the Ducks at home. We obviously know how big of a game that will be, once again, with Ryan Kessler coming back to Vancouver. But if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you somehow get at least one or two of those wins in the Florida trips, all of a sudden that Anaheim game becomes a little bit more important because the Canucks are sort of within striking distance of the Anaheim Ducks once again.
Well, here I am sitting here hoping that the Vancouver Canucks, with all that time off after two consecutive losses in Florida, don't see themselves plummet further in the standings. Having gone full empty, though, it seems to me that Matt, Clay has brought you over to the light side of the force.
I'm not too light. I still think that the Canucks are in tough here. I mean, I actually have some friends of mine daring me to make a bet on the Canucks also missing the playoffs because I was just that confident. Because the reason why I'm still unsold on the Canucks missing the playoffs is they've got 16 games coming up in March. That's a rough schedule already. And as friend of the podcast, Jason Botford mentioned, 10 of those 16 games are against teams currently in playoff position.
Mm-hmm. Matt, you can come over to my side anytime. Just don't bring your haircut.
That sounded so creepy.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants to bring themselves over to our side, you can find us at CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Also on Facebook, we're Facebook.com/CanucksHockeyBlog, or our C4 Podcast Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/C4Podcast. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce, signing off on behalf of Clay Emo at Canuck Clay and Matt Lee 980. You are listening to C4. We hope to hear you again. With that, we're out.
You're a bow, an arrow, a broken guitar.